Hello, everybody, and welcome back to OMB Reviews. I am the critic who is a cynic. How is everyone doing this evening? Happy and blessed Tuesday, and welcome to episode 485 of the Welcome to Asgard podcast, where tonight we're going to be talking about Dune Part 2, not only the box office, but also the movie itself. I, of course, put a review up on the channel. I also have a review out over on Criticlist, which I'm happy to say is now, it seems, the place to be, as many people in our space are starting to join the Criticlist family, are starting to utilize the amazing functions and the amazing features and just the amazing community that has been built up. Shout out to Blaine for all the work that he has done over on Criticlist. You know that I've been a big fan of theirs for months now. Shout out to the Salty Nerds for first introducing me to them. It was funny that, again, I can't believe that I first found out about them through a Discord image, or rather through a Discord message from the Salty Nerds over on their Discord channel. And I thought, oh, this looks kind of interesting. Found out that they were, you know, sponsoring the Salty Nerds and thought, okay, maybe I should check this thing out. And hey, the rest is history, as they say. So it's a place to be if you have not joined yet. A lot of big names are starting to join. And so, hey, go ahead and be at the beginning of, I think, something that will, it's already great, but I think it will be even better as time goes on. We're also doing our final push for the Raven Awards, the 6th annual Raven Awards. Cannot believe this is the 6th time that we are doing these Ravens. This being, of course, the 6th, going into the 6th year that I have actually been on YouTube. It's, again, insane to think that that has actually been the case, that I've been around for this long, that I've been in the community for this long, and that I've been doing this for as long as I have. And yet here we are. So we're getting our final push for the Raven Awards ballot. If you have not submitted your ballot, I've been posting it when I can in all the different places. Let me see if I can find the link, and I will push it once again out into the chat as well. But these are your final days. I think I'm going to be cutting off the voting probably sometime on Friday evening. That way I have time to get all of the winners collected together into my what will be an amazing PowerPoint presentation. If you remember last year, the PowerPoint presentation, I think, went over very well. It used a similar one for the announcement of the nominations this year. So I got to get those winners in there. I tried to do everything I can to also cut together the best one-liner and also the best action sequence to the best of my ability, especially with the lack of skill that I have. But I will go ahead and make sure that everyone has access to that link. So there it is right there. Even though it is a Google form, you do not need to have a Google email in order to submit your ballots. So please let your voice be heard. There's a couple of categories that are pretty darn close, closer than I thought that they would be. And obviously we are still far, far away from the totals that we saw even last year of people who submitted their ballot. I know that every year it seems less and less people are probably voting, more so because there's just not as much stuff to watch. But hey, I think that everyone should let their voice be heard. And I know that I've now said this several times over, but I promise, because there aren't any days left, and this is part of procrastination in general, there will be some screenings, there will be some movie night watch parties over on the Discord channel of some of the nominations for the Ravens this year. More of the more obscure ones, films like, of course, The Iron Claw, which I think is just one of the best films, if not the best film of 2023. Also films like The Holdovers, which is also not getting nearly as much love and attention. Really a solid film altogether. And other films. Only the ones, of course, that I actually have ownership of, that I have actually been able to buy a copy of myself, do not have access to, for instance, a film like, you know, Godzilla Minus One, unfortunately, as much as I would love to. Can't wait for the physical media release of that going forward. Anyway, before we get further, please make sure you smash that like button, light up that fire button over on Odyssey, and smash the rumble button as well. And again, thank you all for being subscribed to the channel, and blessed third week of Lent. Crazy that we're already going into our third week here of Lent. So first off, at 6:20, Bruce hanging out in the chat. What is going on, Bruce? If anyone left a comment earlier, because I only get home at a certain time to be able to actually get the chats up so that I can pull them up, anything from before Bruce at 6:20 is not going to be around. Master of Gaming, what's going on? Welcome back. Snortapoopus Cuber, how are humans and other quitters? There he is. Been waiting for you to come around. So happy to see you back again. Appreciate you being here. Wayward Noodle in the chat. He's a member on the channel. Thank you for being here. Also, Snorpoopus, a member on the channel as well. GMuggy76, what's going on? We got Laura, the Modern Major General Story. What's going on, Shorty Short? Welcome back. Oh, glad to have you here. Glad. King and Rumsky, how are the Raven totals doing? I think right now it's about a third of what the highest voter turnout has been so far in the history of the Ravens. I'll have to go back. I think last year's actually ended up being a record. I want to say we had over 300 responses for that one. And right now we're at about roughly half of that, but possibly a third of that, depending on how much over 300 people had responded. But that's about where it is standing as of right now. Hoping over the coming days that begins to change. And it's not even like, it's not like I get something from it if you vote. It's not like I'm getting any type of ad revenue from that, from the voting, because there's no ads attached to that ballot. Any ads that would be there would be from Google directly and not from me. It's mostly just, it's better when a lot more people participate. It's a better gauge of what people actually think. It's a better, it's allowing us to better recognize those films that deserve not only to be praised, but also the films that deserve to be destroyed, deserve to be shouted down or looked down upon, we should say. To be shamed. Kimberly G, Killian, Shadow Cat. Kimberly G, what is going on, girl? She says, howdy all. Happy Tuesday. Not happy Tuesday to you as well. Thanks for being here. We got Prince Screen, who's a member. Hail to you. Keely Chow also hanging out. What's going on, Keely Chow? Indeed, please make sure not to curse, not to do anything inappropriate. We have a PG chat here. That's how we have a good time. We have the best chat in the business, as I like to say. And everyone's doing okay. Baby Thor had a bit of a rough night. Everything was fine. We're cooking dinner. And once we got to eating dinner, all of a sudden it was, oh, I don't want to eat dinner. I want to do this. I want to do this. I want to do this. And I hurt my back this past weekend, probably something playing with him. And, you know, I'm not the young man that I once was. And I know that anyone who is older than me is probably going to be like, how dare you say that? You're a young pup still. But I'm starting to feel it. I'm starting to feel that age as I'm now in that time of my life where I could run for president. It's like, okay, what else do I have to live for at this point, except for retirement, I guess? But I hurt my back, and so that's been really bothering me the last couple of days. And so anytime that he, and you know, he's a toddler, so he's gonna thrash around even when he's playing, right? Even if he's not upset. And if I'm holding him when he's doing that, oh, it's been very, very painful. So the night was a little bit rough, but we ended the night on a much more positive note, which is good. All right, Luke Zilla, how's it going, brother? Welcome back. We got Laura also telling hello to everybody in the chat. Miss Modern Muses, hello to you, Miss Modern Muses. Thank you again. I know that I said it before, but thank you for inviting me on the channel a couple weeks ago. We had a really great discussion on her Catholic Splaining podcast. That was awesome. Mike Jackson, what is going on? Thank you for being in the chat. Yeah, someone had already disliked the stream. I had one of those early dislikes in quite a long time, so I don't know if it's someone who's just a fan of the Oscars, not liking what we're doing with the Ravens, or if it's someone who likes or hates Dune 2 or doesn't like my take on Dune 2. I don't know. Keila Chazakez, I can't wait for both the Ravens and the World Class BSers Oscar Drunk Watch Stream. Yeah, you could do that. I would say just hang out with the Ravens. I just think it's going to be a much better time because we don't give any attention to the Oscars. They don't deserve the attention anymore. They've lost their significance. And though all the news media will talk about it, and of course we'll see the stories and it'll all be shared on social media and everything like that, it's lost its relevancy. It really has. And it's been that way for a long time. And I'm not saying the Raven Awards are objectively that much better. I'm just saying I think it's a lot more fun to, you know, actually praise the best films of 2023 and be able to also at the same time poke fun at the really bad films of 2023. Snore Pooba says, I'm actually awake. Oh, I appreciate that. We got the R hanging out over on Rumble saying, hail to the greatest reviewer ever to grace the planet. That is saying quite a lot, the R. I appreciate the high praise, but I don't even think I'm worthy of that commendation. Laura, time to say, saw Dune again this weekend. The mocking of Stilgar really bothered me this viewing, and Z's not great acting was exposed by her co-stars. I will say this much. I did not have nearly as much of a problem with Zendaya's acting just because the character was not Chaney, right? That's not who the character of Chaney is in the books, and that's what bothers me. It's one thing if you tweak a character a little bit. Like, Stilgar, to me, felt a lot like Stilgar. I think that they made him a lot more of a zealot in the movie, for sure. He's not nearly as much of a zealot in the book, but there's that element there. So it's almost like they took that part of his character and then just exasperated it. Everything about Chaney in the movie is nothing like what it is in the books. It's like they took and made their own character up from thin air and then slapped her name on it and then said, oh yeah, that's her name, and she's gonna have a relationship with Paul Atreides. Okay, that still does not make her Chaney. And all the excuses that I keep hearing of, well, you know, we got to think about the fact that it's 2024. It's like, yes, but that's not one when this movie is set. So why are 2024 sensibilities going into a world that is not set at that time? And two, this film was based off a book written decades ago, meaning far before the 2024 time. So how about instead we respect the source material and we actually, you know, give the characters their fair shake. We give the characters their fair due. And I know that, like, one of the biggest things that's talked about is, well, you know, gotta have the strong female performance. You already have that. Lady Jessica, even in the books, is very clearly in charge of a lot of the things that are going on. She is the Bene Gesserit Reverend Mother of the tribe, of the Fremen. She's very, very powerful. And I think that the changes they made to her character in the film, I thought those worked. Because obviously you do have to adapt certain things from a book to a movie. That's something you always have to do. But there's a right way of doing it. And I would say, I know that not everyone agrees, because there are some book purists out there. It might sound like I'm a book purist, but I'm really not. Because I actually really like what they did with the Lady Jessica's character. And I thought that Rebecca Ferguson did a great job with you know, that performance. She's always just, again, very talented and is very good at what she does. I thought that the changes that they made, the subtleties of, you know, Timothée Chalamet's performance as Paul Atreides worked. It wasn't the exact image of what Paul Atreides looked like in my head, but I thought that he handled that. There's this moment in the movie where he yells silence, and his performance added to the amazing sound design and sound mixing. People oftentimes don't talk about that a whole lot, but oh my gosh, it was so effective that everyone in the theater, you know, I saw it opening night in IMAX, and so everyone in the theater was like, oh damn, like just collectively. And so I look at that and I think, okay, those are legitimate changes. Those are changes that make sense. And that's more of a, we have to because it was a book and now it's a movie, or this works better for film. Nothing can be said the same about the changes made to Chaney's character. There's no justification for it except for either one, we wanted to make a strong female character, or two, it's 2024, and so therefore we can't just have someone who is just, you know, going along with everything that Paul does. They act as if this doesn't exist in our world anymore. You're trying to say that there aren't people in this world still today, men or women, who don't just go along with what other people are doing, even if they're doing terrible things, or even if they are pushing the line, pushing the boundaries, starting to act in a questionable fashion. But we don't do that in 2024 anymore. It's ridiculous. And the defenses really are just, they're old at this point. That all being said, I still absolutely love so many things about the movie. Cinematography is still breathtaking. The CGI is great. The production design and costume design, right? All those technical elements are so great about this movie. It's a movie that should be studied. It's a movie that will be studied, I'm sure, in film schools for a long time. But when it comes to the writing, when it comes to the pacing, there are some issues. There are some problems. Most notably, again, the fact that they made a narrative choice. And this is where Denis Villeneuve comes in, because he is one of the co-writers of the screenplay. He decides to come in and say, oh, well, we're going to do this with the character. And basically what we're doing is saying, all right, let's make a brand new character, then just slap this other person's name on it and just say that that's who it is. Master Gaming says, is there going to be a giveaway for those who got their Raven predictions right? So Master of Gaming, I've not set up the Ravens Bowling yet, but last year we did do a Ravens Bowling. We will do another Ravens Bowling this year. I will do everything that I can to get that ready as soon as possible so that people can start to make their predictions. But in short words, yes, there will be a giveaway for that again this year. I just don't have anything set up yet. All right, Jeremy Sikowski says, Godzilla Minus One, Blu-ray and DVD in Japan on May 1st. So I believe it will come to the United States this year, maybe this fall. Yeah, I mean, I knew it would be coming to the United States at some point. I knew that a physical media release was inevitable. For me, the issue is that we have to wait till May 1st. So there's no way for me to be able to find a, you know, a legitimate way of being able to have the film so that I can then do like a movie screening for it. Let's see. Stargoose says, Odin, God bless you, brother. Thank you very much, Stargoose, over on Rumble. Appreciate you, brother. The man with the orange hat is here saying, sorry, I am late. Family stuff. It's all good, man. It happens. Bruce, tag say, that reminds me. Walks off to put on a lidocaine pad on my back. I probably need one at this point. Or in like an icy hot or something. I don't know. Corey Cochran, what's going on? Welcome. Michael Brigette, tag to say, there's a new trailer that debuted today for the new DreamWorks film, The Wild Robot, coming this fall. Looks pretty interesting, from the same director of Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon. Okay, that's interesting. I have not seen the trailer yet myself, but okay. I'm always intrigued by new animations from non-Disney studios. Usually when it's a non-Disney production, there's usually a good start. Bruce says, the Raven Awards are greater than the Oscars. I appreciate that. Laura says, oh yeah, May 1st, this my B-Day. So I got Godzilla Minus One Blu-ray for my B-Day. That's awesome, Laura. Happy early birthday. I'm hoping we get a 4K release too. Man, if we can get like a 4K Steelbook release of that thing. I know that Best Buy is out of the business apparently and stuff, but like, man. So frustrating. Prince Green says, I'm pumped for the Ravens this year. Good. I'm glad to hear it. Hardwick says, if you're the critic who is a cynic and you're on Criticlist, doesn't that mean that Criticlist is no longer Criticlist and is therefore guilty of false advertising? I see what you did there. Basically, it's much easier to say Criticlist than professional Criticlist, because it's not a place for the whole professional critic nonsense, right? It's not a place like Rotten Tomatoes where the so-called professional critics are given, you know, a high mountain to be mounted upon, to be looked upon, to be praised, and then defended, and then protected, and given the option to give a really bad review to a movie, but still be able to somehow click that fresh button because they have to, you know? Nope, they don't have that over on Criticlist. King and Rumsky says, speaking of the early downvote, has General Wingster entered the chat yet? Oh, okay. Shots fired by King Kane Rumsky, our pet troll of the Rumble variety. The Hidden Bee just voted. Thank you, brother. Appreciate that. Snort of Poop, whose member says, I found the lack of polar bears in Dune 2 unacceptable. Where is my representation? Cuber, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. How dare they? Laura says, Chani and her friend laughing as Jessica risked her life was kind of infuriating. It was. No, that's the thing. Every single thing about her character change was annoying. And I'm glad, because I know that seeing it again will obviously change perspectives on certain things for sure for me, as it normally does. Like having that second viewing, knowing that things are about to happen, and then be able to actually focus on those performances or to think more about the nuances of the story. I remember just from the moment they introduce Chani at the CH, right, when they get there, and all of a sudden, she's off on the side with her girlfriend, right? And they're just, like, acting like soldiers, and they're like, oh, you're so ridiculous, you're so stupid. It's like, that literally is the opposite of Chani. Like, in the book, Chani helps with the entire process by which the Lady Jessica becomes the Bene Gesserit, becomes the Reverend Mother of the tribe. Like, she literally is in that world. So when I say that they changed her character completely and made her someone completely different, they did in every single way. And anyone out there who's like, oh, you're spoiling. I'm not spoiling really anything. This is one from a book that was written decades ago. So I think the spoiler warning's kind of passed. And then all I'm talking about is something that is actually not being respectful of the source material. I guess the one thing that frustrates me is that there are some who are all about respect for the source material, but they're not nearly as critical of this thing. And it's like, okay, there seems to be a disconnect there. I'm not saying that I'm perfect on that either, but it is something that I think does need to be called out. But anyway, we'll get back to the chat in a second, but just talking a little bit more about Dune and just what is the general sentiment? Because obviously I've got my criticisms of it, and to me, the change in that character is a very big one, and it's obviously not just because of the character being impacted, but also because of the reasoning behind it. Whenever a movie that is so beautiful, objectively, as this comes out, and yet there are things like that that exist within it, I think it has to be called out. That all being said, it is still a very popular film. Over on Criticlist, as you can see, 36 people in our community over here have already voted. And right now, it's overwhelmingly. The audience score is most excellent, 89%. For those that maybe have not seen this before, 80% is the lowest, most excellent score, the high range score over on Criticlist. So this film is overwhelmingly being called most excellent. Now, for me, myself, I put 70%. I thought the film was rad because there are so many amazing elements, as I said. So many amazing elements, especially in the visual effects, especially in the production design, cinematography, right? All those key elements. Acting, too. Almost universally, the acting is great. Javier Bardem as Stilgar made me laugh so many times. And I know that some book purists especially will probably have issues with the changes they made to the fact that he almost becomes the butt of many jokes, or at the very least becomes like the comic relief to a certain extent. But I think that because of how he does still have many of those same elements of what he is in the book, for instance, he's the leader, one of the leaders that exists within the Fremen, and especially this area where the Fremen are staying, and that he's someone that people go to, right, for advice. He's also a believer, right? He's also someone that firmly believes in the Muad'Dib, right? And that's something that definitely exists in the books too. I do think that it's Javier Bardem's performance that I think makes it that much more nuanced, that actually makes it one where you don't mind the changes as much, because he just gives a great performance. He does just a great job with it. But I still, again, I think it's a rad film, but there's some issues. Notice how the people who I follow, my FWB friends with benefits over on Criticlist, what that just means is that these are people that typically I trust their opinions on. And right now, of the four that I have, they have it at a 79. So I think that we can basically say and have a lot of confidence that this is a film that is definitely, I think, worth watching in a theater. I think it's worth seeing. It's not going to be for everybody. If you didn't like part one, I don't think you're going to like part two. And I think that there's definitely some issues that should be called out. But we also have to remember that Denis Villeneuve still is a masterful filmmaker. He knows how to put images on screen. He knows how to paint the scenery. He knows how to be able to craft the scenes. He knows how to be able to... I think it's because of just that visual mind that he has, where he's so heavily involved in the writing, in the direction, in so many of the different departments. You can just tell this is someone who has full control over his projects. We don't have that a lot, right? We think about people like Christopher Nolan. We think about people like Tarantino. We think about people like Martin Scorsese, right? These are just these premium directors that have full control of their sets, have full control of what's going on in their movies. Denis Villeneuve is also one of those persons. I'm not saying that he's at the same level filmography wise. He is my favorite working director, even though he was a part of these changes and he tries to justify it with nonsense to the character of Chaney. Guess what? He's still one of my favorite working directors, because it does not take away the tremendous skill that he ultimately still has. But right now, very, very high scores going right now for Dune Part 2. And again, let me see if I can pull this up real quick. Let's see. How do I pull up my score? I think I have to go down here. So one thing I really like too is that you now can embed your YouTube videos on Criticlist. And so that helps out a lot, especially if you are a YouTuber that has movie reviews, video reviews. You can actually put them in directly and it'll work. When you share your views on, at least on X, for instance, on Twitter, it actually will embed the video on Twitter. And so someone will, the video could autoplay. And so therefore it actually helps you there in that department. But again, obviously, I had a lot of things to say about the movie. I think that Greg Fraser did a great job. And this is one of the reasons why I pulled this up, is because I wanted to, you know, just look at my own notes about the film to see exactly what were some of the highlights. And yes, oh my gosh, the entire sequence, the thing that I love about this, especially from a visual effects standpoint and more so from a cinematography standpoint, is when Paul Atreides finally actually rides the sandworm, which I know sounds awful, but when he finally reaches that moment, right, this kind of growing up, this coming of age part of the life of Paul Atreides, part of his journey, a key part of his journey to eventually becoming the Muad'Dib, is such a powerfully filmed one. And it makes you honestly feel like this is actually happening. That's how good the effects are, and that's how good the cinematography is. Watching it in IMAX, especially with the sound, it honestly felt like you were right there watching as he was trying to figure out how to ride. And it was brilliant. It was breathtaking. And I remember I was in the theater and I had that moment of just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that they actually pulled this off. I can't believe that they were able to, still $190 million is a lot of money for a budget, but the fact that they were able to do that with the effects and were able to do it well and be able to do it so much better than any film that costs over $200 million, which that's all Disney films, all Marvel MCU films, right? All that CGI stuff is very, very impressive. And so, yeah, I think that this film ultimately is going to do pretty well. And I guess that will lead to the second part of why I wanted to bring up Dune today, which is, of course, the box office. And so this is one of the things that I thought was going to happen, and it looks like it is. So Dune Part 2 is still doing well, right, the box office, but it did drop 66% from Sunday to Monday. Now, that's not the biggest drop that we've ever seen, but it does, I think, indicate that this movie is not going to be doing the same kinds of numbers as a film like Oppenheimer. That's one of the comparisons that I brought up on my box office breakdown video. So dropping 66% to $7.3 million on Monday. To give you a comparison, by the way, right now the film is at $189 million worldwide. If you actually take into account that we're not always necessarily getting the most up-to-date international numbers, the film's probably past $200 million at this point. The first thing I'll say is, remember, on Sunday for my box office breakdown, I mentioned the magic number, or the number that we're going to be looking to as a worldwide comparison, at least, is $400 million. Because Oppenheimer, by its second weekend, got all the way up to $400 million, right? So it had a very similar opening to Dune Part 2. I think Dune Part 2 might have done slightly better. But Oppenheimer was then, because of the Barbenheimer effect especially, able to get all the way to $400 million worldwide by its second week, which is why ultimately was able to get to that the heights of over $900 million as well. Dune Part 2, will it get to $400 million by next weekend? I don't know. I don't think, based on these numbers at least, that that's going to happen, but stranger things have happened. One of the reasons why, though, is this comparison here. So, of course, I had the first Dune Part 1 from 2021 up here, just to give you kind of that metric of how you can see how much better Part 2 has done. You know, what impact, if any, the day and date release had. Ultimately, I think that some people might try to say, okay, well, the primary reason why the numbers were lower for the first part was because of the day and date. I think, actually, it's that because of the day and date, people who would have typically not go to see a movie like this or give it a shot, especially in that COVID era when people are being a lot more careful with their money because of inflation and other nonsensical things like government spending and how much that impacts our financial bottom line, I think that ultimately it's more so because more people are interested in Dune now than what they were back in 2021, because it's a very obscure property. It's not the most universally known property. It's not the most universally known IP. I would say it's a kind of, in a way, many much, you know, it's in many ways a niche property. And because of that, I think that actually has more to do with why the film did a lot better this time around than that whole day and date, because it did affect it, but we don't have an actual legitimate source of information to find out how many people would have actually gone to the theater in 2021 had it not been on streaming. I think a lot of people probably gave it a shot because it was on streaming, and I think that might be ultimately why we see where it is right now. But I digress. The big number that we're looking at, though, is, okay, where is that $82.5 million for Part 2 versus the $82.4 million for Oppenheimer? So you notice here the adjusted domestic actually gives Oppenheimer, again, not too far away. Let me see if that was because of inflation. So that was actually, yeah, no, it wasn't because of inflation, because obviously now and between now and 2023, I don't think those numbers have actually been calculated here on the site. But when you look at these numbers, right, $82 million versus $82.5, okay, so you're talking about Dune Part 2 beating Oppenheimer's domestic opening by not that much. by not that much, by about $50 to $60 million domestic. But here's where it gets interesting. Part two, all right? Didn't win opening day, but did win against Oppenheimer for the Saturday. And did win against Oppenheimer for the Saturday. The Sunday numbers, actually, Oppenheimer did better. But here's what I was talking about on Sunday, all right? In my box office, I was saying, now the one, so there was two things going on for Oppenheimer that kind of give it an edge. One, it came out during the summer. It came out during July. A lot more people are off of work. A lot more people are off from school. So people can go to see films early on a Monday. Much more so than during the month of March. Look at these numbers. Oppenheimer, $12.6 million to Doom Part 2's $7.3 million. So even though Doom Part 2 had the edge for its opening weekend, Oppenheimer has already taken back the lead, $95 to $89 million at the same point of release. I think that this same trend is going to continue. I don't see Dune being able to get up to $12 million on its second Tuesday. I think it'll be higher than Monday because it's Discount Tuesday and so more people go. So you tend to see an uptick in the box office on that day. But will it be able to, you know, get anywhere close to the $10 million on a Wednesday or the $10 million on a Thursday? I have some doubts about that. And this is coming from someone, again, I'm a fan of the film. I think it's a good film. I have my issues, of course, with it. But what I'm really trying to say is that I think Oppenheimer came out over the summer, came out at a very special time, was able to catch lightning in a bottle. And though I think Dune is going to do very well, I think it would probably be able to make more than enough to make its money back and to be able to make some profit on top of that. I also think that it's not going to be the same level. I remember someone recently left a comment on my box office video saying they thought that Oppenheimer, or that they believed Dune would be able to do the same kind of numbers. This is many of the reasons why I don't think that's actually going to happen. It's going to do well. I don't think it's going to get close to $1 billion, though, like was the case with Oppenheimer. What say you? Let's head back now into the chat. All right, let's see. Rob D. tagged to say, hello, Odin. I watched some movies this week. Gran Turismo was excellent. The Covenant was very good. Expendables was not good. And The Marvels was insulting. Yep, I pretty much agree with all of those takes. yeah, man. What an interesting mix of movies for you. Let's see. Kasperius. What's going on, Kasperius? It's a new name in the chat from what I've seen, though. It says, honestly, I think if Frank Herbert was still alive today, he probably would have been okay with what they did with Chaney, considering how Book 4 went. Okay, this isn't Book 4. You could say that all you want. That doesn't change the fact that they changed the character from the book. That's like saying, oh, well, J.R. Tolkien, or sorry, J.K. Rowling says that Dumbledore is gay, and so therefore we can just then read that into everything about his character from this point forward. Not including, of course, the movies where, you know, the Fantastic Beasts films where they all of a sudden turn that into an actual reality. Just because an author says something about a character after the fact does not necessarily mean that that is the case, because sometimes we know there are authors that try to write new things and new ideas into their properties that did not actually exist in the first place, or they try to retcon certain things about characters. So just because that is the case, just because you believe that to be the case of something that the person would do, one, doesn't make it any better, and two, also misses the point entirely. All right, Hardwick, trying to say, I wonder if Godzilla Minus One will get an English dub like Shin Godzilla did. It wouldn't surprise me. I hope they don't. I don't think it's needed. I think that the speech is not fast enough for even slow readers to be able to keep up with what's going on. And because it's such a visually stunning movie, I don't really think that you need even the subtitles as much as you would. Shin Godzilla, you need everything. Because Shin Godzilla is such a fast, very dialogue-heavy film. Even I had trouble keeping up with it. Godzilla Minus One, not as much. Luke Zilla, Dad, to say, I thought female characters in the Dune books were already strong, so them changing Chani to make her more complex was just a weird choice. Plus, Thufir Hawat being cut was a shame. Yeah, I remember people mentioning that, and it wasn't until I rewatched part one with my wife a couple weeks ago where I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that they actually kind of did Thufir Hawat. But even think about that one, right? They kind of dropped his character in even the first movie. He's there. He exists. The actor that plays him, I don't mind. I think he's a good actor. But then they kind of just drop him. He's supposed to be kind of a key figure in a lot of the things that happen to the Atreides family. And not having that character, means also not having that character arc. So instead of just randomly creating a new arc for a new character you've created calling Chani when she's not, how about instead you take the characters that you do have and respect them, and if you want to have more storylines, you can then take the stories from the characters that you just put by the wayside and then tell those stories instead. How about that, Denis? That'd be great. See, King Gain Rumsky thinks something is funny. Keely Chaz says, Anakin would not like Dune Part 2 because of the sand. Yes, it's coarse and rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere. See, Hardwick, the 2000 Sci-Fi Channel Dune miniseries is still the most faithful adaptation, although the VFX aren't good. It's also got a sequel, Children of Dune, which had James McAvoy as Leto II. Interesting. Let's see. Snorta Poopus, who's a member, says, overall, I like Dune, but some of the changes were questionable. Thiefer Howard disappeared completely. Yep. And it makes the whole final battle different, because in the book, you have that very strong emotional moment, right? Of that change of heart, that there's just such a powerful story. There's so much power in characters that go through a change of heart and mind, especially ones that made huge mistakes, you know, earlier in their life. And especially in that case, earlier in the story. But yeah. Let's see. Laura says, Herbert got the idea for Dune when he became fascinated with sand dunes at his local beach. Did he really? Is that true? Wow. Prince Green, which do you prefer, Dune to the movie or the popcorn bucket? I didn't get one. For those that missed it, I did not get a popcorn bucket because I showed up right before 7:05. My showing is at 7:05 because of family obligations. I didn't get to my theater because the closest IMAX that I have is still about a 15-20 minute drive, not too far. But I got there at about 6:55, maybe, so about 5-10 minutes before the movie started. And as I'm walking up into the line, I see someone walk away from the counter with one of the Dune buckets. And then I excitedly say, oh, they must still have them. I even got out of the line because there was no line in the premiere section for AMC A-list members. And so I go to the ticket taker and I'm like, do y'all still have the popcorn bucks? She's like, we should get in the line again. No one had gotten in front of me. But then as I get up to the counter, I ask, oh, do y'all have any more of those Dune popcorn buckets? And the guy was like, no, we just ran out. So the person that I had saw earlier, and I had already had a couple people in front of me the first time before I even got out of the line, I think he had gotten the last of the Dune popcorn bucket. So I did not get one. I don't know if they've ordered more. I don't really have a lot of time to go to the theater and check to see if they've got more of these in stock. I'm sad. It happens. It happens sometimes. But I wouldn't know, Prince Screen, because I don't have the popcorn bucket to be able to know for sure. But I think the movie is ultimately going to be better for me. Let's see. B ran on Cthulhu. Time to say, I hope you and your family are well. While the plot is interesting, the story completely falls apart once the planet is conquered. Yeah, I think there's a fair point to be made there. They definitely go way too quickly through some of the narrative points of that. Especially, someone made a good point. I forget whose video it was, but it was a really good breakdown of Dune. It may have even been the Daily Wire's breakdown, but they talked about how the technology of the Fremen seemed so advanced. You're like, wait a minute, how is it that y'all have been defeated all these times when you could easily defeat the Harkonnens with the technology that you somehow have access to? That I did find was a bit interesting. See, Laura says, Austin Butler improvised a lot of Fade's great moments, so that is cool. Oh, yeah. I mean, Austin Butler is a phenomenal actor. He's very talented. It's really cool to see how he went from his breakout performance as Elvis, which, if you think about it, for a young actor, for Elvis to be like your first big role, those are big shoes to fill. And then to go from that, from like this heartthrob character, to Fade Rotha, who is in the books already a pretty, you know, nefarious, disgusting person. But then in the movie, kudos to Denis for this, right? The way that they make the entire Harkonnens like bald and have this weird skin and very creepy. And they were able to make Austin Butler not look like his usual self. It was very much against type. And I appreciate that. It reminds me a lot of, for instance, people like Heath Ledger. Where Heath Ledger, he was typecast for a long time. He was always cast as that heartthrob person, and he didn't want that. And so he would go out of his way to find roles against type. And I think that it's one of the reasons why he's still one of my favorite actors, because of just how much he cared about acting and how seriously he took it. And just also, of course, the performances that he brought out of it, too. See, Michael Brigette says, have you had a chance to check out videos of Chile broadcasts of old Star Wars films from 2003 that's been shared online where they inserted beer ads into the film? It's real and very funny. No, I have not, but that sounds ridiculous. Wow. King Aramchiki says, as a guy who doesn't know the Dune world, would you recommend I see Dune 2 now or Dune 1 first? I would say you should probably watch Dune Part 1 because it does give you the introduction to the characters. You kind of need that introduction to be able to fully understand the things that happen in Dune Part 2. That's where I would go. I would ultimately say, though, King Aramchiki, read the book first. I would say what you should do is, if you are not a book person or anything like that, or if you don't have a lot of time to sit down and read, the audiobook, it's a weird one. The main audiobook, the one that I at least listen to, I think it's the main one. It's very weird because the way that they directed it, the way that they produced it, you have a main author who does his own voices of the characters, and he does a great job. I think he's fine with his vocal performance. But then they randomly decide to add in certain parts where they have different actors doing their own voices for these characters. It gets a little confusing at times. However, it's handled in a way where you can tell audibly when they're about to shift to one of those scenes. You're able to kind of prepare mentally for the change in voices that's about to happen. But it's still, I think, a very good performance of the work. And it was how I was able to get through the entire book after I've heard so many people talk about how difficult it can be to get through because it can be dense at times. But that's what I would recommend first, actually, is know the story before knowing this adaptation of the story, because there's some changes. Victor Fontaine, come fly with me. What's going on? Victor says, Odin, we always, for the most part, align on box office. I called for a $7 million Monday. Yeah. I didn't give the exact number, but I knew that it would probably, you know, I knew that it would probably would not get close to the $12 million of Oppenheimer. And again, it was just because of those things I'd mentioned earlier. B-Ran, what are people voting on? The Ravens, bro. Where have you been? Luke Zilla, Odin, it is looking like Kung Fu Panda 4 will take the first spot at the box office with 45 to 50 million, while Dune Part 2 is tracking 40 to 45 million. And those are so hard to predict, dude, because when they're that close, especially, a good Saturday for Kung Fu Panda or a stronger than expected Saturday for Dune could make the difference between a first and second place finish. So I think it's going to be probably close between those two films. I don't have the most up-to-date numbers when it comes to the projections. I don't know which sites have already put their projections out there. You know, as many of you already know, I tend to go towards using sites like Box Office Pro. I just like the way that they break things down. They're not always perfect, but they're also the only site that was actually able to predict Barbie correctly, as far as just a mainstream site with a lot of attention. Like, they were the only ones that were actually able to get the metric there, whereas a lot of other sites just weren't able to even see what was about to happen. But according to that one, according to Box Office Pro, and obviously these are not the most up-to-date numbers either, but they're projecting Kung Fu Panda 4 to open to 30 to 39 million domestic, a total of 103 to 142 million dollars. So I think that it will probably be able to be top two. I would not be surprised if Dune took first place again. It wouldn't surprise me really either way, but if I had to make a guess right now, I would say I could probably see Dune taking first rather than Kung Fu Panda. Let's see. Steven had to say, based on the actress cameo on Dune 2, do you think they will make more Dune movies or TV series? Well, we already know Denis Villeneuve is planning on making a third Dune. He wants to, what I think he's going to do, Dune Messiah is the next project that he wants to do, but he hasn't started it yet. There was no agreement to it yet, whereas, you know, Dune Part 1 and 2 were being filmed around the same time. There was a lot of, you know, shared time and space there. which is why they were able to release them so close to one another. Or they were supposed to be releasing them close to one another. Obviously, a pandemic kind of came and disrupted that quite a bit. But I think that we'll probably have to wait a good 3 years, maybe 3-4 years before that film comes out. And I think that that is ultimately being determined on whether the box office is a hit. Opening weekend, I think, kind of shows that it is definitely doing better than what I think a lot of people would maybe expected it to do. But it still has a little ways to go. I think it'll get there. I think it'll be able to break even, make its money. Remember, too, and I haven't done my RCC, I haven't done my random crazy charting for this film yet, but it's looking like a lot of the money probably for this film will come from the international markets. And that's not a very good thing because we know that that means a lot smaller of a box office share of a box office take. The only difference is that that would only negatively impact people like Legendary because they're the ones that really put up most of that budget. And they also had to pay a licensing fee to Warner Brothers to distribute the movie. So it looks like Warner Brothers probably is going to be coming out of this thing already. In the black, so they would be definitely prompted to want to make another. But I think Legendary, because of their involvement as the production company, would ultimately be the determiner of whether they go forward or not. Steven says, did you like Dune 1 or 2 better? It's a mixed bag. There's some parts of Dune 1 I prefer to Dune 2, and then there's some parts of Dune 2 that I prefer to Dune 1. It's really hard to say. Icthulhu says, LOL, how will Odin explain the popcorn bucket to his wife? That's just the thing, though, is that my wife has enough of a social media presence where she also knows about the bucket as well, and she thinks it's hilarious, too. So when I was like, all right, I really want to go see the film opening night, and part of the reason why is because I really want to have a chance to get one of these ridiculous popcorn buckets, she was like, I get it. She's like, I understand. Because she knows that it's, you know, for me, I know that there's other YouTubers and they like to make the crass and disgusting jokes about the bucket and everything like that. And again, totally validate that those, the way they design that bucket leads that, you know, leads the mind that direction. But the talk about using it and stuff like that is just disgusting. But for me, it's more of a, no, it's a part of history now. It's a part of movie history now. It's a part of the cultural zeitgeist. And it'd be really cool to have that piece of history. Anyway, Rob D says, I want to see Austin Butler in The Bike Riders in July. It's a motorcycle gang movie. Okay. Definitely have a lot more faith that he can do that now that he's been in this movie. It shows the range he has as an actor. Michael Brigette says, I haven't had a chance to watch Apple TV show Masters of the Air yet, but heard lots of good things for Austin Butler in it too. Okay. Did not know he was in it. Have not seen that trailer print screen. The mention by Rob D was the first I had heard of that. Steven, will you watch Kung Fu Panda 4? Were you a fan of that franchise? Do you recommend worth to watch any of them? I've only seen, the only one I remember is the first one. I may have seen parts of the second, but no, it's not a franchise I care about. That was one early on when, as soon as they started to announce sequels, I thought, oh, cash grab. Soulless cash grab. And I'm not trying to put down anyone who is a fan of the other films. It just, I don't know. I thought the first one was cute and fun. Didn't try to do too much. But when they announced the sequel, I was already just not interested in it. It was like, okay, one and done, and you're good. You don't need to do more with the story. So I would say the first one's worth seeing. I have no plans on seeing Kung Fu Panda 4. Steven says, Will Smith post Bad Boys 4 image? Do you think audience are ready for his return? I've not seen the image, but honestly, he might get more support than not because even though he's become such a despicable person and oh my gosh, everything with him and his wife is just sad and depressing and sickening in many, many ways, right? All the emotions, it seems. I think that he might actually be helped by that whole thing because people either have sympathy on him and so they'll want to see him for that, or they'll be like, oh, let's go see the movie and get slapped by, you know, be like, I just got slapped by Will Smith because I saw his movie, right? I don't know. I feel like a lot more could be done with that meme-wise. And meme culture can be very powerful. Let's see. Your average Patriot nerd, what's going on, sir? Says, I'm looking forward to seeing Dune Part 2 when I can, though I am apprehensive about the changes, especially of Chaney. I saw the 84 movie before reading the book, which helped. Y'all know my thoughts about the the old first movie rendition. Not a fan. I'm not a fan of that director in general. I just don't get the appeal of his style. I know people like him, and I'm not going to try to attack anyone for liking him, but I don't get it. But yeah, the book I did enjoy, actually. I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. Apparently, the second book kind of goes off the rails. My wife, who liked the first book well enough, went on to continue to listen to the sequel, and she said she couldn't get into it as much because it just kind of gets a bit crazy. And I'm like, oh, that's sad. Robby says, how are votes doing for the Ravens? How much longer will voting be open? As I mentioned earlier in the stream, it'll be open probably until Friday. Friday evening will probably be the cutoff. I always give unofficial dates on those because it really depends on if something happens. Because obviously, if all of a sudden family's coming in this weekend and it's like, I'm not going to have any time, I might have to cut it off sooner. But yeah, probably something like Friday. The only time that I would ever extend it is if there is a tie. I don't like doing ties. So I would be like, hey, I need just a couple more people to vote, three more people, an odd number of people to vote. Or something similar to where that number, you know, there's a clear definitive winner. I don't think I've had to do that, but that's sometimes been the mindset of, okay, let me keep it home, but just a little bit more, just to hope that there are a couple more votes that are allowing us to know for sure who a winner is in a category or not. But anyway, till Friday, and the votes are, to my knowledge, I think still running much lower than it was even last year. Cause I want to say last year's had over 300. All right, Steven says, when you saw Dune 2, did your theater give huge applause for Deadpool 3 trailer? Mine was silent. Not applause, but there were definitely a lot of people laughing in my theater. So I did go opening night. It was a packed theater. So a very affable audience. Rob D, Dune 2 is unfortunately not woke enough for the general audience, American audience. Oh, okay. Let's see, Victor Fontaine. I read Villeneuve has three or four other projects to do, including Cleopatra, before he gets back around to Dune 3. And again, I think it probably has to be greenlit as well. Steven says, did you see Sting? Did you see Sting's last match? Were you a huge fan of his? Glad he had a proper goodbye send-off. Steven, good question, man. Yeah, I'm almost all the way through AEW Revolution. That was the pay-per-view from this past weekend. I'm at the beginning of that match. The Young Bucks have just come out, so I have not gotten yet to the entrances for Sting and Darby Allin. So I'm very excited. I've heard nothing but great things about his last match, about his send-off. I've also not even watched his final goodbye speech when it went off the air. I just want to be able to experience that, and then, you know, I don't even want to know what happens in the match or anything like that as far as results go. I kind of just want to be able to experience it. So I should be able to finish that maybe even tonight. And so I'm very excited for it. Yeah, I was a fan of his. I started watching wrestling back in the 1990s. It was something that I fell in love with because I have to thank my papa, my grandfather, God rest him. He was a big fan of wrestling. And so I kind of learned about wrestling from him. My uncle, his son, right, was also a fan of wrestling. And so from that, you know, kind of introduction, my two brothers and I, my older brother, my younger brother, we ended up watching wrestling for a long time, every single week, every single day it was on. We would watch, we started off as WCW fans. So we actually started off, we watched Nitro every week. We eventually watched Thunder as well, and we loved it. We thought it was great. Back when Glacier was fighting, back when you had Disco Inferno fighting, of course, the Monday Night at Wars, but like the old school, the NWO versus Wolfpack, just so many fun things. And so one of my favorite moments still is Sting, when the question was, who is he going to join? Is he going to join the NWO or is he going to join the Wolfpack? And then he gives that fake, you know, he takes the shirt off and all of a sudden it's the NWO theme. It's the NWO shirt. And so then Hulk Hogan's happy. Everyone's happy. And all of a sudden, you know, he's just standing there with him. But then all of a sudden he rips it again and it's the Wolfpack shirt. That was such a cool reveal. That was such a cool moment. And so, yeah, I owe a lot of why I love wrestling to Sting and to the performance that he was able to give and to everything that he was able to do. So, yeah, absolutely. I typically don't talk wrestling a lot on my streams, But that is definitely one I'll make an exception for just because of how important that moment is. He's also, he seems more like a kind of guy who, when he says this is his last match, it will actually be his last match. I think it's hilarious that Ric Flair came out before everything, because obviously I've seen that part of it where Ric Flair coming out, because like, dude, Ric Flair, he had his last match, and then he had it again, and then he had it again, and it just never stopped. But I think Sting actually will finish, and I think that'd be good. Let's see. Snorri Pupus Cuber says, whenever I see the popcorn bucket, I think of the Bene Gesserit pain box. I'm not sticking my paw in that thing. That's probably one of the more PG thoughts to have about the bucket. Of course, anytime I think about that, all I can think of is that visual from the first film and the way that the actress pronounces it. It's the Gumjaba. And it's like, the Gumjaba. I don't know. There's something about it. Laura says, Odin, I disagree with Rob D about Dune not being woke enough. There is Dune stuff all over TikTok. The kids seem to dig it. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the, you know, as a teacher, a lot of those kids are talking about it, saying they're hearing it's the greatest film ever. They're hearing it's an amazing movie. And so I think that there's a lot of truth to that, that a lot of the younger audience are, and I think a lot of it has to do, again, with they I think knew what they were doing when they cast Timothy Chalamet as Paul Atreides, and what they were doing when they cast Zendaya as Chaney. Not because of the acting prowess, though, I will say, I think what at least Timothy Chalamet was able to prove was that he does have those acting chops. He does have the capacity to pull off that role. He does become Paul Atreides. I think he does a great job in the film. He's one of the stronger performances in there. Not so much with Zendaya. Not like I was expecting a whole lot. I will say that she's given some good performances, though, in other movies. I thought that she was great in The Greatest Showman. That was much more her style. That was much more her personality, her thing, I guess you could say. But it doesn't surprise me that a lot of this stuff apparently is all over TikTok. Includes says, can you talk about what your students think about current movies entertainment? I have a feeling they are abandoning structured stories as a whole. Love to learn what they think. Yeah, I mean, I never try to dive too deep into it just because, you know, I try to always, you know, separate those two worlds in my life as much as I can. But one of the first things I always ask every year is a series of questions, which includes what their favorite movies are. And what's always interesting to me is how some of them actually, more than you would think, like what we would consider now to be more classic stories. Like there's still at least one a student either every year or every couple of years that will mention A Princess Bride as their all-time favorite. You, of course, have the ones from this year, for instance, who a couple of them said Barbie, and a couple of them, I'm trying to think, said Grown Ups. But even Grown Ups, I think by today's standards, some would say, oh, man, well, actually, that does show some promise. I've never gotten into those movies, so I can't say that. But there's others where they'll mention films from the 80s, films from the 90s. Right, from that modern, I would say the modern golden era of cinema. And every now and then you also have the ones that will mention the last great films that came out. So I think I've had a couple where the film Whiplash was mentioned, for instance, things like that. So there's some that actually have really good taste. But it's hard to say because, or rather, the one thing I'll say to that I think is true, Icthulhu, is that many of them actually struggle with this question. And that's why I always start with it, because I always say, if you have difficulty coming up with a favorite movie, imagine trying to determine what is good and evil. Imagine trying to make a choice when it actually matters. When you're thrust into a situation where you have to decide whether to do something or not to do something, whether to do something that which is evil, do something that which is good, or avoid something that is evil. Right? How much harder is it going to be in that instance versus what's your favorite movie, right? And it's always an interesting discussion. But what I've noticed is that a lot of them not only struggle to name a movie, but also tend to try to say, I prefer TV. So a lot of them prefer TV. A lot of them prefer series. A lot of them prefer, you know, not necessarily Stranger Things, but things like that, right? Where it's more of that episodic type of storytelling and not the long-form storytelling that you have, the singular long-form storytelling, I should say, that you would have in a movie, for instance. Let's see. Steven, have you seen Shogun? If so, will you post a review video? Been hearing a lot of good things. I have not seen it yet. I want to see it. I've heard great things about it too. I might do a review in a video, but I will absolutely do a review on Criticlist. So make sure you're on Criticlist and follow me there. Let's see. King and Remsky, I have an idea. At theaters, they could have a Will Smith cutout slap you before you go in to watch the Bad Boys movie. Dude, that would be brilliant marketing. I would go see the movie just for that, because that is brilliant marketing. I've never seen any of the Bad Boys movies. I just don't have any interest in seeing them, but that would be brilliant. Lukezilla, I would love if Villeneuve did an extended cut of Dune Part 2, even if it's just the scenes of Thufir Hawit and Tim Blake Nelson's character. Sadly, we probably won't get it since he is against it. Yeah, I've heard that same thing, that there's no plans at this time for an extended edition, that what is on the screen is what was intended. So, yeah. Let's see. Kasparius tagged to say, your wife thought book two was crazy. End of book three is when the crazy really starts. Oh, yeah. I mean, I have no doubt about it. I just have knowledge of the first one. But, yeah. Basically, I'll say this much. The second book was crazy enough to where she didn't want to continue. So she was like, okay, I think I'm done with this story. Harwick says, part of why the Dune books get so weird is that one of Frank Herbert's major inspirations was his copious use of psilocybin mushrooms, aka shrooms or magic mushrooms. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Steven says, is it official that Madam Web won't pass over $100 million overall the box office? I recently, in my box office breakdown over on geeksandgamers.com, check out my articles on geeksandgamers.com. I am a writer over on GNG. And in that one of the last box office breakdown I did, where I covered Dune, I have a whole section dedicated, a very short section actually, dedicated to an update on Madam Web. Because right now, it's actually now in the 90s, right? It actually was able to reach. And a lot of it's because the expectations for this weekend were that it was going to drop 60% or so. And I think it only ended up dropping in the 40s. So it actually held a lot better than what people thought. Now, next weekend, or this weekend, I should say, I think it'll be more interesting because with Dune coming out, that's a very specific genre. That's going to dominate a specific audience, specific demographics. Whereas this weekend, not only do you have the second weekend of Dune, which is taking up a certain demographic, but then you also have the new film Cabrini coming out. So that's going to be a whole new demographic that can be taken away, attention taken away from a film like Madam Web. And you have Kung Fu Panda 4 coming out. I don't know why I said it that way. Kung Fu Panda 4 coming out, which also will take that away. So it would not surprise me to see a sharper drop this weekend versus last weekend because of that, because you have so many different genres being represented and therefore so many different parts of the general audience being represented that you could see that kind of change happen. But yeah, right now, actually, I would say, regardless of that, there is a chance. There is still an outside chance. Let me see if we have the actuals for the weekend. Let's see, so Madam Web is at $91.2 million. So it's still not making money. It's still not making any profit. But at $91 million, could it still potentially barely eke out $100-plus million? Yes. It will still be, by far, the lowest grossing, worst performing box office / superhero movie of the modern era by a while. J.S. Pena, time to say, ahoy, what's going on, brother? Can't wait for the Raven Awards. Same here, dude. Same here. It's always a fun time. For those that have never done it before, we stream. Now it's going to be at an actual set time before kids. It obviously was a little bit, could start earlier, right? Could start before the Oscars started and then go all the way through. Not nearly as much in more recent years. So right now the plan is we will have the Raven Awards start at 7:30 Eastern, same start time as I've been having recently because of my son's bedtime. But 7:30 Eastern time. I don't even know when the Oscars start. I assume they start at 8 Eastern these days. But as I said, we don't really, if anyone's going to be watching the show expecting us to keep you updated on the Oscars, there might be some in the chat that do that. I will not, because I'll be focused on the Ravens, because it's meant to be a boycott show too. It's meant to be like, no, let's just, screw the Oscars. We're going to do our own thing. We're going to have a lot of fun. So at 7:30 Eastern, that is when we are going to start the Raven Awards. And then we will probably go for about 2 hours. So we will not start right when we're not going to start right when the Oscars start and then end right when the Oscars end. We're going to be going for about 2 hours. Should be a good time. Should be a very, very good time. Harvey says, Spice was inspired by shrooms. Sandworms were inspired by maggots that digest them. And the Bene Gesserit were inspired by Shaman Maria Sabina, Mexican sacred mushroom cults, and Herbert's nun aunt. Wow. That's a lot of inspiration. Wayward Noodle, what's up, brother? Says, the reduction in voting is obviously because of COVID. The writer's strike, your viewers being Bill, being Big and Ted, solar flares, and a cabbage shortage. Of all those things, Wayward Noodle, I had no idea that there was a cabbage shortage going on right now. Oh my. You have explained everything, Wayward Noodle. It's the cabbages, that's why. Now I am sad. Those poor little cabbages. They didn't know what hit them. Michael Baguette says, saw today that one of Sting's sons posted online update because he's a huge gamer, YouTuber, who streams Destiny 2. And shared why he hadn't posted lately. When you see the match, you know why. Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Thank you for being ominous with that. I appreciate it. I love that. It makes it more exciting. Hardwick says, speaking of Sting, yes, I know it's a different one. Who did you think played a better Fade, Ratha, Sting, or Austin Butler? I think that Sting, despite my hatred for that movie, probably fit how the character is written a bit better, but I think I still prefer the Austin Butler take because it is an interpretation of the character, but I still think there are enough elements of Fade Ratha there where it doesn't feel like the Chaney thing, right? It doesn't feel like that change where you're like, okay, this is just a completely different person. It's like, oh, this is a very unique take, but there are still those core things, that are a part of Fade Ratha. So. See, your Edgebury Nerd says, I like the 84 film, though I get its problems. Visually, I thought it worked, and I enjoyed Toto's soundtrack. I also never continued the books because of the weirdness I heard of. Yeah. That's what's been keeping me from moving on. But hey, I'm okay having the headcanon of just the first book. Because the other interesting thing is that the movie, and I guess this would be where the spoilers kind of come in because it does deal with some elements of the end of the book. So maybe cover your ears if you care that much. But at the end of the movie, it's like, okay, the holy war is on. Like, essentially, it's all about, hey, we're about to go on jihad. Whereas, and this is my own experience with the book myself, as I was listening to the audiobook when I was coming back from Orlando from the MegaCon event that we had, crazy to think that MegaCon was about a month ago. Crazy. But for some reason, I don't remember him being as gung-ho as he is in the movie. Like, in the movie, he seems like, oh, we're going to war. Whereas in the book, it sounds like, all right, we're going to war, but I got to be careful because my terrible purpose. And, you know, it seems like he's trying to play more of a balanced game in the book than in the movie, where it feels just a lot more like hit the pedal, you know, hit the gas, etc. I don't know. Did anyone else get that? Maybe it was just the way that the book was being read. I don't know. Kid Jazz says, my favorite wrestling moment is Stone Cold giving The Rock and the Corporation a beer bath. Oh, of all time, absolutely. And keep in mind, it was the Attitude Era of the WWF. And yes, the WWF, not that World Wildlife Fund nonsense, but the old school WWF. When they had that whole Attitude Era stuff, that's when we switched over. So the Monday Night Wars were, you know, clearly won by the WWF. Cthulhu, who's a member, says, bah, Sting will never be better than when he produced the Police album Synchronicity. I see what you did there. let's see, Steven, what movies do you love showing your students? Also, was there a movie that you really enjoyed and appreciate forever that was shown to you when you were at school? For me, it was Willy Wonka and Glory. Oh, man. I don't remember all of the movies that I was shown in school. I might have to one day, like, sit down and try to rack my brain to say, what movies did we watch? Because there were some films that were, you know, not too great. or they were like the standard films that you would watch. As far as I always take pride in showing my students good films. So, for instance, we talk about morality, you know, good and evil, making good and you know, making good decisions, good and bad, in the very beginning of the year. And so the movie that I use for us to have a conversation about after the fact is from the film which we watch called Eye in the Sky. If you've never seen Eye in the Sky, it is a beautiful film. Another reason why I choose good movies is because I have to have a movie that's good, because if I'm going to have to watch it like six different times, because remember, if you have one prep, meaning one grade level, who all learn the same thing, you're doing the same thing like four or five times a day, and then six or seven times every cycle, depending on where you teach and depending on things like that. People don't often think about that. It's like, oh man, not only do teachers have to prepare, but then they have to mentally be okay with sometimes talking about the same thing with different groups several times and making sure they still cover the same thing and everything. I still don't know exactly how I've been able to find my way into this business, because when I was younger, I never thought I would, but here I am. So Eye in the Sky, though, is a great film about morality, because it's all about, what would you do if you were in the situation? If you were a drone pilot and you were given an order to fire a Hellfire missile, and I will just stop it there, because I think the film is worth not knowing anything about, because it deals with a very real moral scenario that our soldiers, some of our soldiers, actually have to deal with sometimes on a daily basis. So it's always a fun discussion, though, and that film is great. Aaron Paul's in the movie. It's, I believe, the last performance ever given by Alan Rickman before he passed away. And even though it's not the biggest of roles, it just shows you how much of a class act he is, how much of a masterclass in just acting and performance that he has, that he's able to not just be Severus Snape, but also be great in anything he does. So I love that movie. Helen Mirren also plays a general in the film, and she also does a fantastic job. It's a great film. Eye in the Sky, from 2015, I think. Great film. And then the other major film that I show is called, of course, The Passion of the Christ. So every time, probably in the next couple weeks, we'll start it. I try to get as close to Holy Week as we possibly can. Passion of the Christ, Mel Gibson, Jim Caviezel. I love that movie so much. It's so powerful. And one of the things I like about it the most is how so many of the students are like, oh my gosh, like you hear about it in the scriptures, right? You think about, you see the visions of the crucifix. You think, oh yeah, Jesus died for us. Okay. But then you actually see, oh no, he actually like suffered and was tortured and died a very gruesome death. Like we always hear, oh yeah, he was crucified. It's like, what does that actually look like? What does that actually? And so many students always come out of it like, oh man, like I think it's a way, for me, it led to a very, very much a deepening in my faith. And I think that for a lot of students, not for all, obviously, but I think for a lot of students, it leads them to that too. So those are the two main ones. I would love to find a way though to bring Nefarious in, because after having seen that last year, I thought that I would probably still, if I were to ever show Nefarious in a classroom, I would cut out everything after the after the execution scene. Everything after that I would cut out, because I think that would, in the mindset that our kids have, I think that that would either distract them. For those that haven't seen the film, there's a sequence that happens where the character in the film is getting interviewed, and the guy doing the interview is Glenn Beck. The kids these days have enough knowledge to where they would either look that up or know who that is. And then that would immediately make them think, oh, is this some type of conservative propaganda stuff? Like, I don't want it to be viewed in and through a political lens, because I just think it does such a great job of explaining diabolical possession, diabolical influence. And this is one of those questions that every year students are just, they are so, whenever you start talking about possession, whenever you start talking about things like that, it's like all of a sudden, oh man, this stuff is real. Like this stuff happens. And then you start talking about the movies and how the movies get some things right, some things wrong. So I would love to bring that one in, because I think that that would be a really interesting discussion. The issue is that it just does not, it does not really fit into what we're talking about during the year. All right, Wayward Noodle, I have a You're Killing Me Smalls t-shirt from The Sandlot, Every time I wear it through an airport, your young kids will point at it and say, that's my favorite movie, Restores My Faith. Yes. The Sandlot, I tell you, that thing has aged like a fine wine, because I agree. I've also heard a lot. It's that movie that a lot of people still watch when they're younger. Master Gaming, The Hollywood Reporter, like Cabrini. I mean, it's the same director as Sound of Freedom, so I have a lot of confidence that it's a very well-made film. I have an early access. I have a screener. The issue is that I can only watch it on a computer. I can't find a way, because of the restrictions on the apps, I can't find a way to get it onto a TV. If I did, I would have already watched it. But because it has to be watched like on a computer, it's like, oh, okay, well, it's not as easy to be in that situation. So if worst case scenario happens, then I'll probably end up going seeing it Thursday. Let's see, Laura, I'll probably go see Cabrini this Thursday. Is that the movie you like that you've been talking about? Yes. So that's the one about St. Francis Xavier Cabrini, who was she was the first canonized saint who was, she was the first canonized saint who was an American citizen. So she was not born and raised in America, but she was an American citizen. And so she was the first American saint, essentially, like the first citizen. Her story is beautiful. The impact that she had on education, what she was able to do at a time when there was actual oppression. Like, here today, all about people saying about, oh, women are oppressed, etc. No. She lived at a time when that was actually, like, in very real ways happening in the United States, right? And just what she was able to do is really amazing. So I'm very excited that this film has been made, and I can't wait to check it out. Rob D says, I want to see Madam Web nominated for every terrible award for the 2025 Raven Awards. Oh my gosh, that's right. It will be. I'm still trying to figure out the best way to get something going. So as soon as this Raven Awards ends, I do want to get some form opened so people can start making nominations now. So that way people don't forget about what came out or what was good, what was bad. And it's almost like I'll have a short list and say, hey, here are the things that have been mentioned, and now make your official nominations from the short list, and still invite people to add in more if they want. Prince Green says, did you see that Dakota Johnson has now disowned Madam Web? I've heard that. I haven't read it myself. Sometimes things are taken out of context. It just wouldn't surprise me, though, if she did that. It's kind of hard not to. The Archpatriot says, I didn't see it, but I also disown Madam Web. I think most of us do. The General Grievous 19, what's going on? Snorapoopus, oh no, not the cabbages. Agreed. Laudate Jesus Christus in secula. General Grievous 19, God bless you. Hardwick, have you heard of the Spice Diver fan edit of David Lynch's Dune? I've heard that it's a huge improvement over the theatrical cut. Chris Gore even recommends it. Ooh, okay, I've not heard about that. But if it makes David Lynch's film better, yes. King and Rumsky, can't remember if I asked this already. Do you have a favorite wrestler of all time? Ooh, I don't know if you have. I usually go with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Just something about the guy who is fighting his boss and getting away with it somehow. And it's like, that's kind of the thing that, not that, I just want to be very clear. I have no beef with my boss or anything like that. But it's just at the time when I was watching it when I was younger, I thought, wow, that's just so cool that that's being represented. You could only do that in wrestling. Like, you'd only do that in this fictional scripted space, right? And so probably him. Of course, I do love Undertaker. I used to love CM Punk. I'm just not much of a fan of him anymore. He just doesn't. I wish he would retire, to be honest. I wish he was just. I think he would be best served as a ring announcer. Commentator. He's great on commentary because he can still speak. He can still speak on a mic like most people can't. But his in ring ability has just gone so far. I don't think that it's there anymore. But probably Stone Cold Steve Austin. Laura says, I think the last thing Odin would want is more of Lynch's Dune. Longer cut is better, of course. I guess for me, it's like, if it's someone else who's doing the edit and it's not Dune or it's not Lynch who has a word in edgewise, maybe it could be better. Maybe it could be. All right, I'm going to start to wrap things up here. Prince Green, I am the eye in the sky looking at you. I can change your mind. Snorvupa says, I love the politics and competing factions in the first Dune book. I read the later books, and they didn't hold my interest as well. The prequels just seemed meh. Yeah. Yeah. That's what it seems like. So I think I'm kind of content to stay with the first one. All right, Thulu. Oh, come on. How are you not showing your students Airplane or UHF? I am disappointed in you. Yes, because those are completely relevant to teaching religion. Luke Zilla, did you ever get to see Monarch Legacy of Monsters? Personally, I enjoyed the MonsterVerse. I didn't like this show aside from Kurt Russell and the 50s flashbacks. I got to start it, and I didn't like it. I thought that the acting was very weird. The acting was very green from the Japanese actors in the beginning. I was like, oh, I don't really like this. And as you all know, I'm not a fan of the MonsterVerse at all, so... See, Hardwick, I'd be interested in seeing your review of The Straight Story. It's the most normal movie David Lynch ever made. Other than his name in the credits, you'd never know it was directed by him. I think you've mentioned that to me before, Hardwick. I have no interest. Laura, let's see, says, Nefarious did a great job showing the evils of so many prominent sins and issues. It would be hard to be pro-death penalty after seeing that movie. Yeah, it would be. Obviously, there's a lot of people that still are, but I think that it does do a great job of kind of showcasing that. But more so to me, I think it does that great commentary, that really, really great commentary about diabolical influence and possession, too. Orange Chat, I know you got to run. I'm going to be heading out soon myself. Southeastern Kaiju, what's up, brother? Well, thanks for being a member of the channel. I heard it on GNG Daily. It must be true. Ah. Wayward Doodle says, a great book for morality is 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. The bomb stopped the war, but at what cost of civilians? The U.S. military would not target the emperor and make him a martyr. Yeah, no, absolutely. That comes up every year, too. We talk about that a lot, and I think that it is a very important one that is something that can go beyond just a simple, it was wrong or it was good. There is so much question. And the thing I always like to bring up with that one, especially, is we can talk about the justifications for using the atomic weapons to try to stop the war, the number of lives that we may have potentially have saved. And that word potential is so important when we talk about morality. But to me, the decision to choose Nagasaki, and I believe part of it was chosen, it was on a list, obviously, but the initial original targets, were changed to Nagasaki, or one of them was changed to Nagasaki because of weather. And you think about, like, think about how many innocent people were killed, and they were killed because of weather, if you think about it, right? That's where, to me, the moral issue becomes that much more clear, where you're like, okay, it's not a very clear, oh, this was completely correct decision in any way. I have a lot of issues, of course, with it, but that's a whole other discussion. Southeastern Kaiju, subtle message sent. What do you mean by that, Prince Green, I'm about to head out soon. Yeah, I'm heading out soon myself. General Grievous 19, thank you for the stream. Hey, thank you very much, man. Thank you. Killy Chow. I write for the website, man. What are you talking about? If anyone's going to pick that up from anything, come on. Kimberly G. Killian, Shadowcat, thank you, Kimberly G., for being here. You have a good night. Southeast Kaiju, hail to you. Cthulhu, have a great night, everybody in the chat. And Odin, hail to you as well. Take care, every human. Steven, what is your favorite dish to eat during Lent? For me, it's shrimp, especially at bowling crabs and fish tacos. Ooh, okay. Yeah, for me, one of my favorites, one of my go-tos, it's not even really a meal necessarily, but it's protein shakes. So I take some frozen strawberries, a little bit of milk, and then a scoop or two of protein powder that has, like, very, very, very low sugar, like essentially no sugar whatsoever. And I mean, the strawberries alone are just, so good. So that's like my go-to. It's my way of making sure I still get protein, especially on the days that I'm going meatless. And as far as any other non-meats, my wife made something called gnocchi last night, which is also very good. I like a lot of pastas too for meatless. Anyway. All right, the R, you have a good one. Southeast Kaiju, you have a good one. Keely Chow, you have a good one. Anyway, so before we head out, though, please vote in the Ravens. If you've not voted in the Ravens yet, there is the link one more time. So you have up until this Friday, Friday evening was going to be the time when I cut it off. So please get your votes out there. I'm going to do everything that I can to ensure that there is a screening in the Discord channel, a few of them scheduled this week for movies that some people may not have seen. So stay tuned for that. I've got to do it at this point because there's just not enough time left. No screening tonight, though, just because of, again, lack of time. But it'll happen. There will be at least one, so pay attention to that. Let me know also over the Discord as well what time slots work best for you. I could obviously make a playlist of things and have them just, you know, play and let it be a movie watch party all day long. But I obviously also want to do something that's working best for y'all, but also something that is following any rules that need to happen in order for a watch party to happen also. So anyway, thank you, everybody, for your love, for your support. This has been a ton of fun. Dune Part 2 has a lot of great moments in it, has some issues with it. And the Ravens, this Sunday, 7:30 Eastern time. Make sure you're there or be square. Anyway, you guys are amazing and beautiful people. I don't have my March shoutouts video yet. I don't think any major changes happened, though. So to my February people, you're going to get another shout out. But also, no, I will be getting the updated shout outs as soon as I possibly can. So you guys rock. Have a wonderful rest of your evening. A blessed third week of Lent. And as always, God bless.